out. But I got to get the 1 gig link system finished off. I'm waiting for the stuff to come in. Guy was supposed to send me all this equipment, and I pay them, and so far I haven't seen it. I'm not too happy.
Okay, I hope he's not a fraud.
Well, I saw the gear there. I called him on the phone. He said he was tied up with a few things, take a little time to send out. But from the time of date to now, it's getting me a little concerned. And I can't find his number amongst all my papers, which even bothers me more.
All right, I hope everything works out with that, Hal. I really do. All right. Yeah, I've finished my lunch. I'll stay with you here, and then I'm going to go. Well, here's some guys on sideband. I think maybe the band's opening up on 50.125. It's amazing. If you sit there for an hour or so in the summer, you start hearing Florida, you start hearing Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas. It's very good conditions.
No, I can understand. Yeah, when there's certain ducting and everything taking place, even though we had a solar flare, but all sorts of crazy things could happen. I got to get a beam up, because I'm not going to waste my time without a beam. And I'm supposed to get that beam Barry said to help me put up. And then I'll throw 2,000 watts on there, and we'll see what happens.
Absolutely, Hal. Yeah, you definitely need a beam to do any serious work on 6 or 2, 432, 1296. Forget it if you don't have a beam. 6 meters, you get away with a loop, but it's pretty bad. A loop does not work well. I had a loop. And the difference between that and the 5-element M squared is the difference of day and night. Yeah, it's not ducting. This is E-skip. You know, during the summer, we get this E-skip type propagation almost every day. If you listen for an hour or two, it's in there. You know, it goes in and out. That's why they call it sporadic E.
I got a call. I'll get back to you. K6DPZ.
All right, see you in a bit. N2EO. I'm going downstairs.
Yeah, right on the corner. Oh, well, I heard you in there. I didn't get a chance to stop by, but but I don't know where today's bringing me yet. I haven't done, I'm just doing my paperwork now to get out. So you enjoy your little trip there, and I will catch you in the Mobile shortly. This is Kilowatt Delta 2 Alpha Killer X-Ray. We'll be on the side.
All right. I'm out and about for a while today, so maybe we'll hook up. Give me a shout on the radio. And to BPN Mobile.
K6DPZ, you downstairs? N2EO, K6 Dark 4 Zombies, do you copy? K6 Dark 4 Zombies is listening, anybody around?
Okay, BUX, hey, how are you?
Okay, running around here a little bit, it's pretty warm, but... What are you going to do? This is, what we got, 98 degrees? Is this 98 degrees? No, it can't be. No, that's something else. I got in the wrong position. I'm reading something else. I'm not reading temperature.
Well, I was supposed to get up to 6 degrees less than that, so it's not going to be much different.
Yeah, I feel like I'm boiling bacon. It's warm. I don't know. We're really... What is it, El Nuno or El Hajo, whatever?
I know it's very hot. Oh, something I'm curious about. Okay, on a beam, it seems like the bandwidth, I was looking at a 3-element 6-meter beam, the bandwidth is awful small.
You mean bandwidth as far as the SWR of the beam? Well, yeah, if the elements are not overly thick, the Q of the beam is pretty sharp, so the bandwidth would be pretty tight, depending on how the beam was designed. Normally, larger elements will give you a little lower Q, will give you a little broader bandwidth.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at one here now. It goes from 50 to 50.6. or from 51 to 54 megahertz.
Well, you want 50 to 50.6 because most of your activity is going to take place in that range. And I would say don't go 3. Try to go 5 elements. You have a little better back to front with 2 more elements.
Okay. What's a good front to back to look for?
The highest possible from all your manufacturer's specs. Because different manufacturers will put down their front-to-back ratio. So you want the highest possible front-to-back to give you the sharpest directivity.
Oh, okay. I thank you muchly. I was listening to you before, and I was thinking about trying to put together a Moxon, but right now... I'm doing a bad thing with gout. My hand is about twice as big as it usually is, and I can't touch anything with it. So the idea of building a Moxon, that's out for now. But I wanted to try 6. I've never been able to make a contact on there yet. I've heard of you guys on, but I was in the Mobile, and they were doing CW, and that's kind of hard to do going down the road.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, 6 meters, if you're going to work DX, you want to be horizontally polarized. You need about 5 elements. Spacing is very important. The wider the spacing the beam is, the sharper the beam width is. So all these factors enter in. When the Yagi was developed, there were a lot of different things they took into account. Well, Japanese Mon did very good on that design.
call, please? KB2DPD.
Be recognized. Go ahead.
Thank you. WA2NLL KB2DPD. Negative copy. KB2DPD clear. Go ahead, Dutch. I think it's Charles. Back to you.
Hey, how you doing? I haven't heard you in here for a while.
Been busy. But you pick it up with Hal. KB2DPD clear.
K73KPUX. Yeah, Hal, as I say, never made a contact on 6 meters. I have listened to them a bit, but kind of hard to pick up from the mobile, especially, you know, vertically polarized. I guess it wouldn't be too good of a signal.
And it's open, and there's a lot of fun to be had. So, you know, you could have a lot of fun up on 6 meters. I'm just trying to get my tail fetters out of here right now.
Okay, how's that little mini of yours?
Well, mini two, as an ouch, it's over the body shop. And mini one seems to be cooking fine so far, as far as that goes.
Uh-oh, an ouch for mini two, huh? Hey, that's bad. You know, that's really bad. I saw one the other day. It was really nice, but it was convertible, and I don't think living in New York City, I really want a convertible.
Now, it wouldn't be the car of choice in New York City, but I'll tell you, as far as the car goes, as being a car, I think it's really great. Anytime you can, you know, get 40 miles to the gallon on the highway, with the price of fuel and everything else, and all the other advantages this little buggy has, I'm sold on it. This one's a stick shift, a 6-speed, a 203. The other one is 2012, it's automatic. And I get more kick out of driving the stick than I do you know, doing the automatic. But the XYL likes the automatic more.
Yes, right. Yeah, I know what you mean there, Hal. But I've driven enough stick shift that if I never shift another gear with a clutch in it, I'll be happy. Used to drive a Thermodyne Mac, an old Thermodyne Mac tow truck, and as I say, if I never shift another gear, it'll be all right with me.
A6DPZ. Well, it's funny. You know, I drove stick about 25 years ago. I've had Fords and column shifts and everything else. So when I went in on the, I happened to see this car on Northern Boulevard. I walked in at his dealer, and I said to the dealer, "Yeah, I'm interested in that little Mini Cooper he has parked on the lot." He says, "Well, Grandpa, it's a stick." I said, "So what? I would like to try it." Well, after I took him out for a spin, I think he knew Grandpa still knew how to handle a stick.
Hey, way to go. Yeah, you get that from these young kids out here today. They think that just because you've got a little bit of gray hair that you don't know how to do anything. Shoot, I was driving stick shift at the age of about, 9 years old, living in the county in Maryland. I got to drive up and down the road a little bit. My father would let me, and then my cousin let me take his 10-wheel dump truck down the road. So, yeah, I've been doing stick for quite a while. Don't miss double clutching at all, which, you know, you don't have to do with a car nowadays. But, yeah, it's, I don't think I really miss it. I put it in drive and go. That's it.
A6DPZ. Okay, I like it. I don't even think about it. And it keeps, I feel it keeps me alert. And, you know, you get to a point where you don't even have to use a clutch. You watch the tack and you slip it and slide it until you get in the six.
Yep, a friend of mine had a 59 Volvo. And I lost $5 to him. And at the time, I was only making about $5 a day. He said that he could shift through all the gears. Once he was in gear, shift to the rest of them without using the clutch. understand. How can you do that? Young and dumb, about 13, 14 years old, and jumped in his car, and he went through all four of them without using the clutch.
A6DPZ. Yeah, well, this has six. Once again, the first, I watch the tack. I go through all of them. It's faster to use the clutch, but just to prove it out, you know, it works very well. You just got to watch your RPMs. Let me get out of here. I got to check on something. I'll catch you later. Just keep six. Don't pick zero.
Okay, take care. Now, have yourself a good day, and try not to get too warm. KPUX. We'll be clear.
WA2USJ, WA2USJ, this is K6 Delta, Papa Zulu, calling WA2USJ, you in there? Rich, are you around? 2EO, K6DPZ.
Automotive thermodynamics of radiators and cooling systems and other things, so now you don't get as many problems as you used to get.
I have to say, it seems they have made a lot of improvements in cars. Well, one of the things, I never used to buy new cars. Now I always buy new cars. But, you know, I remember when I had cars when I was younger, like something always breaking on them. Now, you know, you maintain them and, well, you know, some people run into problems, but they seem a lot more reliable than they used to be.
Yeah, I guess now because they turn around and they seem to have come up with a concept that will make the whole thing last a lot longer, so this way when something breaks, you just throw it away instead of repairing it. That whole throwaway society mentality. So if they make everything last a little bit longer, then when something goes, it's usually a major thing, and it causes you to divest yourself of your possession. But I think the biggest, probably the single biggest advance for preventing overheating in stop-and-go traffic is probably the electric fan. The thermostatically controlled electric fan on the radiators. Because when the engine was sitting at idle and the fan was driven off of an auxiliary belt off the crankshaft, at idle, the fan just wasn't moving enough air through the radiator for there to be good heat transfer to keep the coolant at a low enough temperature to prevent the engine from overheating. Now, with all of these cars with electric fans, the electric fans are pulling as much air as they possibly can through the radiators, which also made it a little more efficient and stuff like that, and that's probably the number one reason why you're not seeing as many people overheat.
Into YYC, I think, you know, another big advance was fuel injection. Well, I think it's been around for a while, but, you know, they don't make cars with carburetors anymore. I remember having cars with carburetor problems, and just, I don't know, they never seemed like a really good system, you know. They just were too temperamental. Started having problems, it just, like they could never get them right.
Well, I believe there were actual studies done that under certain types of applications, carburetors were actually more efficient than fuel injection. But for all-around performance, fuel economy, for other reasons and other things, and more able to be controlled by the computer and all the other stuff, that's why fuel injection won out. Because as you said, if your carburetor wasn't spot on, you could have problems, both from performance and mileage standpoint. So, but there are still plenty of carbureted engines out there that are running fine and doing what they need to do. So it's just that they're a little bit more on the back burner now, you know, not as prevalent. But they're still out there.
Well, I was told that you can no longer buy a new carburetor. They only sell rebuilt ones. They're not producing them anymore. I remember I had a car, a Dodge Diplomat. This thing, whenever it would rain, I'd have problems with it. Start stalling out. All had to do with the carburetor. And evidently, it was prevalent with those cars.
Well, I don't know. When you say rain, stalling out in the rain, that always leads me to point towards ignition issues. Bad coil, bad wires, bad spark plug wires, stuff like that. Stalling out when the temperatures are cold outside or the temperatures are hot outside or stuff like that, without the rain being thrown into the mix, that would kind of like gravitate more towards fuel issues. But whatever, maybe there was some electrical harness that used to get wet that was screwing up some sensor or something on the side of the carburetor. I know they had started putting electronic sensors and all sorts of other things in the carburetors at some point, and that was a big cause of problems because, you know, you had to maintain them and keep them spotlessly clean or else the thing wouldn't work, and it would trick some other part of the car into thinking something was wrong.
Yeah, I guess they have made a lot of improvements, but like you said, cars are not built to last. One thing seems that they've really chintzed on is the body of the car. No car with real bumpers on it anymore. It's just pieces of plastic with like styrofoam behind it. And I don't know, I get, you know, this government standards, but wouldn't think it offers you a lot of protection.
I don't know. You know, you would be, I guess, hard pressed to hurt yourself if you could turn around and encase yourself in a layer of styrofoam and, you know, have it be all snug and not moving around and stuff like that, but still have, you know, the ability to breathe and live and stuff like that, and then throw yourself down a flight of stairs. I'll bet you'd survive. Styrofoam's interesting stuff, so I guess what they've done is they've decided that the exterior of the vehicle isn't as important as protecting the things inside the vehicle. So if you make body panels and stuff like that out of composite materials and you back them up with things like styrofoam, you not only save on weight, which makes the vehicle lighter and more fuel efficient, but you also can absorb quite a lot of impact through the compression of the styrofoam and the other stuff and the other parts where they do put the meat of the car and the body and the frame and, you know, anti-crumple zones and blah, 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 blah. So I guess that in itself, you know, like you said, it may be the cars look chintzier, but they're a heck of a lot more safe. Yeah, you might not be driving a four-ton behemoth down the road, big Cadillac Fleetwood, but at least you'll walk away from something that gets, when you get hit.
Yes, though, but doesn't look like, I don't think car holds up. I mean, I think big a major impact with today's cars as opposed to those old behemoths, you know, basically, your car is going to be totaled today, whereas back then, might have been fixable.
Exactly, and 2PPM Mobile. Well, that's the whole thing. Now they've turned around and they've designed the cars to be disposable. You know, once it gets into a major accident, you throw it away. You don't reuse it. It's kind of, I guess, a condom philosophy. It's there for protection. Once you don't need the protection anymore, you throw it away.
Yeah, that got me thinking about something. You see all these people riding around with like a big rubber mat they hang off the back of their bumper. I think the thing looks pretty stupid.
Well, you do realize you're only supposed to just prevent scuffs and scrapes and whatnot from people parking their cars on the street, in front of you, behind you, whatever. But all these idiots forget to put them back inside the trunk of the vehicle when they come back from parking their vehicle.
Okay, I wasn't sure what the story was with them. think the radios feel them. They're really reusable. They're not like the old ones where you could kind of just take one from one car and put it in another.
Some of them are keyed to the VIN of the car. Some of them are, you know, just too darn hard to get out. You can't do it like you used to be able to just yank it out in 30 or 40 seconds. Now you got to, you know, disassemble three quarters of the dashboard and have all sorts of special tools and other things. And then all you've got is the faceplate of the radio, the guts of the radio may be buried somewhere else, you know. Exactly, it's not worth it. No, the big thing is still handheld electronics, GPSs, phones, crimes of opportunity, things that you leave in your car for people to just do a quick, you know, snatch and grab, and they're gone. So you don't leave the telltale suction cup circle on the inside of your windshield to tell anybody that you've got a GPS unit, and you make sure that you don't leave anything in plain sight for anybody to be able to glance in your car and, you know, maybe just bust the window, grab something, and walk away.
Well, it goes beyond that, because I think people in Long Island, you know, still think they're living in the 1960s, because you go to residential areas, they're not breaking in the cars. They just walk around and look for ones with open doors, and all the things you mentioned are sitting there. They don't need to break windows, and people they don't get it. I mean, yeah, it's in your driveway, but you're not staying up all night to keep an eye out. It takes 2 seconds. You leave the door open. They open the door, grab all that stuff you left in there, and it's amazing what they leave.
Well, it's that throwaway society mentality. People don't have the same attachment and value to their possessions that they did when, you know, when times were tough and you really had to work for, you know, for every little thing that you got. It wasn't, you weren't entitled to it. You weren't entitled to a cell phone at the age of 12. You know, you didn't have all these gizmos and doodads and things that basically the kids just think of them as throwaway devices. I mean, my daughter accidentally left her iPod sitting on the ground when she was waiting for me to pick her up from school, you know, a few months ago. And she was less upset about it than I was. And I'm like, you don't understand. You know, that's an object of value. I said, somebody sees that on the ground, they're going to pick it up. And she's like, nobody's going to do that. So there's this whole naive thing going on, too.
Well, that's what I was pointing at. You know, that, you know, I lock my doors before I go to sleep. I mean, just about everybody has a remote for their car now. You don't even have to go outside. All you have to do is, you know, touch the button from in your house. I don't know. I don't get it. You know, people just don't think. But did you find the iPod when you went back?
Yes. Surprisingly enough, it was still sitting in the grass exactly where she had been sitting and hadn't been picked up or absconded with. And I'm like, you know, I said, you have no idea how lucky you are. And I'm trying to explain to her. I said, you really think that someone's just going to walk by, see that there, and leave it, saying, oh, the person who left is going to come back for it? I said, you really and truly, you know, need some street smarts, kid. So hopefully with time that'll come and she'll start to get a little more paranoid like me. N2PPN.
N2YYC. How old is she?
At that innocent age, 16 and a half, where she thinks that the world is all, you know, happy and flowers and good and happy, happy, joy, joy.
Well, it's not a bad thing. But, yeah, doesn't explain the adults who, you know, can't keep track of their belongings.
And I guess it doesn't explain the adults who let their kids just go anywhere and do anything and don't even think twice about it. My daughter wanted to go and have a sleepover with a friend of hers from Brooklyn who lives in Diker Beach, right outside of Bay Ridge. And well, just going to relinquish my daughter to, you know, go into Brooklyn without us dropping her off and meeting the parents and seeing the house and everything else where she was going to be spending the night. So, you know, other people, their kids, eh, what the heck? Yeah, go ahead. Go into Brooklyn. Get on the railroad. Figure out how to get there.
Well, I would really, I don't have kids, but I see all these kids, you know, hanging out all hours of the night, unsupervised, and basically just looking for trouble. And you wonder where the, you know, the parents are, and they're at all concerned.
These are the same parents that can't keep track of their personal portable electronics. Think they're going to keep track of their kids?
It's a different world we live in.
Yeah, but it's always a challenge. It's always something. But it's up to us to make sure that, you know, they get through it so that they can be the ones that someday will get their kids through it.
Going over the Throgs deck now. The sound looks really nice. Not a ripple.
Excellent. I'm just coming down my block now. Get back to the house. Grab a bite to eat. Got some errands. Things to do, and then can relax for a little while. Start it all over again.
A 2H, did you listening? Anybody around for a short Q-cell and demonstration of ham radio?
Well, you got N2PPN just signing in Levittown. Good afternoon. And you got Howard up there on the Throgs Neck Bridge. N2PPN, 7-3, guys.
Okay, this is Bob. The call letters are WA2HGD, and we're in the backyard here of our house in Long Beach, New York. And again, the name here is Bob.
N2YYC, good afternoon, Bob. Name here is Howard, entering the borough of the Bronx.
I guess the borough of the Bronx must be very nice at this time of the year. Last time I've been to the Bronx was when I was over at the Bronx Zoo.
Okay, actually not going to be seeing much of the Bronx. On my way up to state the Adirondacks, just passing through.
It's very nice. I've been to the Adirondacks a number of years ago, and I also like to go up to the Catskills, but places called the Grosvenor's and the Concord, but those places don't exist anymore.
Yes, they're long gone. But they want to bring gambling to the Catskills.
So I heard that would not be a bad idea, but it's also kind of far. I live here in Long Beach, and things I understand that they have gambling up in Yonkers right now. But I'd rather go down to Atlantic City if it isn't.
Well, they don't really have gambling in Yonkers. They have slot machines at the racetrack. I think they have that at Aqueduct now, too.
I was hearing on the radio that at Aqueduct, the crowds there, when they get angry, they start banging at the machines and breaking them.
Rough crowd. The Shinnecock Indians out east on Long Island, they're looking to open a casino. I don't know, a couple of places mentioned.
Yeah, I've heard about that too a while back, and wonder if that's going to take fruition.
I would think so. It's just a matter of them finding a location. A lot of money involved, so I'm sure they're definitely looking open.
Heard about the Foxwoods up there in Connecticut, and I understand that the people that are running it are like 20 times removed from the actual Indians. You know, they're very, very distant, related to...
Well, I don't know if the Indian tribes actually run these, because, you know, they usually contract some company to run them. Maybe they get some jobs for their tribe, but, yeah, I'm sure there's, you know, some things that aren't on the up and up. You know, they're looking to make money, that's the bottom line.
That seems to be true. I remember when I was out in Northern California a couple of years ago, those Indian casinos really were run by Indians, and you can actually see that they were there actually running the place. Nevertheless, I'm really not a gambler anyway, but the reason why I had to, you know, wanted you to come back is because I wanted to demonstrate hand later to a friend of mine who is right here outside the back porch. Her name is Sarah, and maybe you could say hello to her.
Hello, Sarah. Are you from Long Beach also?
She said yes.
All right, very good. I forget your first name. Do you work HF at all?
Yes, that's, I have an advanced class license for a number of years now, and I do work HF, and but I guess I want you to be outside here on the back porch with a little 2-meter rig to see what's going on. Yes, HF has been open for a little while, and I've been on the air, I think it was about 3 nights ago, when I was able to get contact all the way out into Albania.
Very nice. Well, that's what you should demonstrate. That's the exciting part of ham radio, not talking on repeaters.
Remember years ago when I had my very first contact, I actually had a contact all the way out into France, and people that came over were from France, and my parents told them, oh, gee, you know, my son just spoke to somebody in France, so they all gathered around and wanted to see if I can talk to somebody in France again, but I was very lucky to get somebody in East Rockaway here on Long Island.
They speak French?
These people, they spoke French, and the thing is that, but that never happens, you know, it's whoever you get at the other end, you know, it's that's how you talk to people on this radio, but nevertheless, they thought that she was, you know, he spoke to somebody in France just a little while ago, and somebody else from France will suddenly come back, but that never will happen.
I was asking if the guy from East Rockaway spoke French, at least you can impress him with that.
It would have been a good idea back then, of course.
Well, I mean, I guess when there's a band opening, usually you hear stations from a certain part of the world, though. I mean, usually if it's open to Europe, then you're going to hear different countries in Europe.
Seems that, you know, you can get the most contacts when you have these contests going, like Field Day. And Field Day really was nice this year. I was able to get contacts, you know, coming in from all directions, especially going north and also south from my location over here. And my antenna system really is just a bunch of dipoles that are up in the attic. So it was really pretty nice when you're, able to, you know, do these contacts during the contest.
What bands were you making contacts on?
I think it was mainly 20 meters.
All right, very good. Yeah, I'm just a technician, so I have a 10-meter rig. But that band hasn't been too open as of late.
I have a little 10-meter rig that I bought many years ago, and only put out about 10 or 20 watts, and that was fun using it to upstate New York in the car and taking all of these contacts on 10 meters, but these bands aren't open. At least the last time I've been on 10 meters, that was a while ago, and everything seemed to have been dead.
Sporadic, occasional fan opening, but really short-lived. Last fall, it was pretty open, but it hasn't been consistent since then.
One of the fun things of ham radio is the reason why I got the advanced class license back in 1976 was because the Jet Propulsion Laboratory out in California sent out a probe to all the various planets, and I was very interested in slow scan TV at the time, and I managed to get the advanced class license and also get this rig for people via slow scan TV, and that was really quite a bit of fun. And I've been using slow scan TV ever since, even though now these things are not standalone type computers. You can hook them up to your own personal computer, but that was quite a nice bit of fun there, using slow scan TV to see the people that you're actually speaking to.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, I've never played around with that. What frequency do you do that on?
Well, on 20 meters, it's 14 point, I think I was 250 or something. I'm not sure right now, but, I haven't been on slow scan TV for quite some time. I have what they call the Robot 400, which is a device that changes, if you have a white color, it'll be like 400 hertz, and then the black color is like 900 hertz, and anything in between is gray. And this was the Robot 400 only, black and white stuff, but nevertheless, it really did fulfill the purpose.
Okay, I guess equipment for that is advanced, as you said. But I think you'd have a hard time getting the current generation to have any interest in that when they can just hook up a very inexpensive camera to their computer and do the same thing.
Well, the fun is to, see who's out there, and it's like going fishing. You never know who's out there.
How's my signal? I'm up in Westchester now.
It's as if you're here in Long Beach.
Are you close to the water?
I would say about 300 feet from the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, very nice. I'm sure that's a good location for working DX.
My antennas are up in the attic, and, I've been getting all of these countries throughout the years.
How come you don't have any outdoor antennas?
We are in a two-family house over here, and, it would be kind of, restrictive over here. But nevertheless, all the stuff that I have is up in the attic. I have dipoles for 40 meters, for 15 meters, 20 meters, and for 10 meters. And that served me quite well through the years. I've worked all continents and worked all states since 1976.
Very nice.
I've even, attempted to work all of the cantons of Switzerland. I'm only missing two.
Isn't there a award for all counties in the U.S.?
All counties, all zip codes or whatever? Oh, yeah. But, I like to